All right, welcome to the deep dive. You know how this works. You share your reading list with us, and we dig through it all and surface the most interesting stuff.
Absolutely.
Today, we're diving into what a potential second Trump administration might mean for the U.S.
Okay.
Our main source is Gordon T. Long's December 2024 research newsletter, The Unshackling of America.
Right.
And we'll also be pulling some insights from James Rickards, A Reset for America. We'll be focusing on four key areas: justice, health, national security, and economic revitalization.
Sounds good.
So, you know, it's pretty fascinating because Long doesn't just see these potential changes as significant policy shifts. He actually describes them as historic, even revolutionary.
Wow.
He compares their potential impact to something as fundamental as the separation of powers. It's clear he believes the stakes are incredibly high and that there will be major pushback from the political establishment. It definitely sets the stage for a potentially turbulent second term. So let's start with justice. Long really hones in on Trump's cabinet picks, especially Pam Bondi for attorney general.
Okay.
As a signal that rooting out what he calls the deep state will be a top priority.
And what's interesting here is that Long connects this directly to Bondi's experience as one of Trump's lawyers during his first impeachment trial.
Right.
He argues that she has a deep understanding of how the federal bureaucracy can be used to target individuals for political reasons.
Right.
Which makes her appointment a powerful statement about the administration's intentions.
Yeah. It's also interesting that, according to Long, Trump's transition team is bypassing FBI background checks for nominees.
Really?
He cites past controversies like the Michael Flynn case.
Right.
And the Hunter Biden laptop situation as justification for this move. Oh. To be clear, for our listeners who might not be familiar with the process, these background checks are typically standard procedure for high-level government appointments.
Yeah, yeah.
They're designed to uncover any potential conflicts of interest or red flags that might disqualify a nominee.
Uh-huh.
So skipping them entirely is definitely a bold move and suggests a lack of trust in the FBI.
Right.
But does this really build public trust in the justice system, or does it just look politically motivated? What do you think?
That's the core question, isn't it? On the one hand, you have those who see this as a necessary step to clean up what they perceive as corruption within the FBI and the Justice Department. They believe these institutions have been weaponized against political opponents and that a more drastic approach is needed.
Right.
On the other hand, critics argue that bypassing these checks further erodes the rule of law and sets a dangerous precedent. It's a delicate balance, and the long-term implications will depend on how these actions are perceived by the public and the courts.
Yeah. Let's shift gears now and talk about health, another area that could see some major shakeups. Long points to Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s appointment as Secretary of Health and Human Services as a potential game changer.
Kennedy's history of questioning vaccine safety and Big Pharma's influence on healthcare is well documented. This appointment signals a potential shift in the government's approach to health policy, with a greater emphasis on individual choice and skepticism towards established medical institutions.
I'm curious about the potential impact of this. Could we see changes to vaccine mandates, or perhaps a shift in funding priorities away from large pharmaceutical companies?
Those are certainly possibilities. Long suggests that Kennedy's appointment could lead to a revisiting of the handling of the COVID-19 pandemic, potentially challenging the mainstream narrative, and leading to greater scrutiny of policies like lockdowns and mask mandates.
This raises the question of whether these actions would lead to positive reform or further division and mistrust in the healthcare system. After all, we've seen how deeply polarized the public has become on issues like vaccines and COVID-19 policies.
Exactly. It's crucial to consider the potential consequences of such a dramatic shift in healthcare policy. Will it empower individuals and lead to more diverse perspectives, or will it undermine public health efforts and erode trust in scientific expertise? It's a complex issue with no easy answers.
Now let's move on to national security. The source anticipates a significant shift in U.S. foreign policy under a second Trump term, particularly when it comes to China.
What's particularly intriguing is the potential appointment of Senator Marco Rubio as Secretary of State. Long sees this as a deliberate move to challenge China's growing influence on the global stage. He highlights areas like Taiwan, the South China Sea, and fentanyl trafficking as potential flashpoints in this escalating rivalry.
Long also suggests that ending the war in Ukraine through negotiation will be a top priority for Trump. He points to the appointment of General Keith Kellogg as a special envoy as evidence of this commitment. But can Trump succeed where Biden seemingly failed in navigating these complex geopolitical challenges?
It's a big question mark. The war in Ukraine has become deeply entrenched with both sides dug in and showing little willingness to compromise. And when it comes to China, the relationship has grown increasingly adversarial in recent years. Trump's approach to foreign policy is often characterized as transactional and unpredictable, which could either create opportunities for breakthroughs or exacerbate existing tensions.
All right, let's delve into the final area, economic revitalization. The source points to Trump's likely use of tariffs to renegotiate trade deals and address the national debt.
He also highlights the potential economic impact of deporting illegal immigrants, particularly on industries like agriculture. Long argues that finding alternative labor sources would be crucial if such a policy were implemented. He suggests that this could lead to a rise in automation and a shift in the types of crops being grown.
Finally, there's mention of a potential shift away from social spending and towards investments in innovation, productivity, and small businesses. But will these economic policies really lead to growth and prosperity, or could they further exacerbate inequality? This is where things get really interesting, because Long highlights a warning from the Fed about high leverage at hedge funds and life insurers.
This is a significant point that deserves further exploration. To put it simply, leverage is the use of borrowed money to amplify potential returns. While it can be a useful tool, it also increases risk. When things are going well, leverage can magnify profits. But when things go south, losses can be equally magnified, potentially leading to a cascade of defaults and a financial crisis. The Fed's warning suggests that some of the same conditions that led to the 2008 financial crisis may be present today.
Oh, wow.
So while Trump's policies could stimulate economic growth in the short term, they could also be setting the stage for future instability.
It sounds like we're walking a tightrope here. On the one hand, there's the potential for a booming economy. On the other, we have these red flags that remind us of past crises. This leads us to another interesting point that Long brings up. He talks about this concept of American exceptionalism and the potential for a stock market bubble. He argues that global economic woes are driving capital into the U.S., which could be artificially inflating asset prices.
It's a fascinating argument that challenges conventional wisdom. Typically, we think of a strong economy attracting foreign investment, but Long suggests that the U.S. is becoming a safe haven for investors fleeing troubled economies elsewhere.
I see.
Which could be creating a dangerous disconnect between the stock market and the underlying fundamentals of the economy. This disconnect could lead to a bubble that eventually bursts, leaving investors with significant losses and potentially triggering a wider economic downturn.
Okay, so we've got a potential clash with China, a potential healthcare shakeup, and a potential economic boom or bust.
It seems that way.
It seems like a lot of this hinges on how these policies are implemented and how the different branches of government interact.
You're absolutely right. Predicting the future is always a tricky business, especially in a political environment as volatile as ours. But I think it's safe to say that the next few years will be anything but boring.
All right, before we get too far ahead of ourselves, let's take a moment to digest all of this and consider what it all means. We've covered a lot of ground, but there's still much more to unpack. When we come back, we'll delve deeper into some of the specific policy proposals, Long outlines, and explore the potential ramifications of each. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're really getting into it now, dissecting the potential impact of a second Trump administration based on Gordon T. Long's The Unshackling of America. But let's bring in another viewpoint with insights from James Rickards and his book, A Reset for America. He offers a different perspective, doesn't he?
He does. It's interesting that Rickards is actually quite optimistic about a potential economic turnaround under Trump, even though he recognizes the challenging economic situation that Trump would be inheriting.
Really? That's quite different from some of those warnings that Long points out. What's making Rickards so optimistic?
Well, he highlights a couple important things. First, he thinks Trump's focus on deregulation would be a big driver of economic growth. Rickards argues that too many regulations stifle innovation and entrepreneurship, you know?
Yeah.
So getting rid of them would unleash what he calls the animal spirits of the American economy.
Okay.
He also believes that Trump's infrastructure plans would create jobs and stimulate demand.
But wouldn't that spending increase the national debt? That's something Long seemed concerned about.
Rickards acknowledges that concern, but he says the economic benefits of infrastructure investment are greater than the costs.
Right.
He believes that a strong infrastructure is essential for a successful economy, and that any short-term increase in debt would be balanced out by long-term growth.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So deregulation and infrastructure are two pillars of Rickards' optimism. Is there anything else?
Yes, maybe the most interesting part of his argument is how much he emphasizes what he calls a renewed sense of purpose in the country after Trump's election. He argues that Trump's victory really energized a part of the population that felt ignored and left behind. And he thinks this renewed sense of purpose will lead to more economic activity as people are more motivated to work, invest, and build.
It's interesting that he focuses on that psychological aspect of economics. He's basically saying that optimism and confidence can actually drive economic growth.
I'm trying to square that with some of those more cautious points that Long makes. Like, Long mentioned the Fed's warning about high leverage in the financial system. Does Rickards talk about that at all?
He does, and he doesn't seem too worried about it.
Really?
He says the Fed is often too cautious and that we should be careful about taking their warnings too seriously. He thinks the financial system is stronger than it was in 2008 and that the chance of a major crisis is pretty low.
That's a bold statement, considering the parallels that Long draws between now and the time before the 2008 crisis.
It is, and it really highlights the difference in their viewpoints. Rickards is much more confident in the market's ability to self-correct and for Trump's policies to create a cycle of growth and prosperity. Okay, so we've got these two contrasting narratives, Rickards' optimism and Long's caution. I want to dig into some of those policy proposals that Long talked about, like Schedule F and impoundment. These are areas where there could be conflict between Trump and Congress, right?
Definitely. Let's look at Schedule F first. Remember, this executive order would basically reclassify certain federal employees, especially those making or advocating for policies, as political appointees. This would give the president a lot more power to hire and fire those employees.
Right.
Bypassing those usual civil service protections.
And Long suggested that Trump might use this to drain the swamp, as he puts it.
Right.
He wants to replace career bureaucrats with people who agree with his agenda. But wouldn't this politicize the civil service?
That's the main criticism of this proposal. Opponents argue that it would weaken the merit-based system, you know, the one that's supposed to ensure a neutral and competent civil service. They're worried it would lead to cronyism and make government services worse. They also argue it would discourage people in the federal bureaucracy from speaking freely because employees would be scared to speak out against the administration's policies, fearing they could lose their jobs.
It sounds like this could turn into a big power struggle between the executive and legislative branches. What about impoundment? How might that work out?
Impoundment is when the president refuses to spend money that Congress has allocated. It's controversial, and the Impoundment Control Act of 1974 limited it quite a bit. Long suggests that Trump might challenge whether that act is constitutional,
right?
Arguing that the president inherently has the authority to control spending.
So if Trump wins that legal battle, he could basically ignore Congress and choose not to spend money on programs he doesn't like. Wouldn't that create chaos in how the government makes its budget?
It certainly could. Congress has the power of the purse, and they probably wouldn't be happy with the president taking that power away. It could cause government shutdowns and make it hard to pass laws.
All right, so we've got these potential conflicts over Schedule F and impoundment. But let's not forget about those economic indicators that Long brought up, which don't paint a very good picture of the U.S. economy right now. He seems particularly worried about inflation and the rising cost of living.
Yes, he says wages haven't kept up with inflation, meaning the average American can buy less with their money. He also thinks the government isn't being honest about how bad inflation really is. He points to things like the cost of housing, healthcare, and education going up as proof that inflation is much higher than the official numbers say.
And he's concerned about a potential stock market bubble caused by global uncertainty. He argues that all the foreign money coming into the U.S. is artificially inflating asset prices, creating a disconnect from the real economy.
Exactly. And he highlights the Fed's warning about all that leverage in the financial system, saying this could make any downturn in the market even worse. He compares the current situation to what happened before the 2008 financial crisis, which is worrying.
So we've got a potential stock market bubble, a financial system loaded with leverage, and rising costs of living. It sounds like a recipe for disaster. Is there any good news at all?
Well, Long does mention some potential positives. He points out that the U.S. energy sector is strong because of the shale revolution, which gives the U.S. an advantage over countries that rely on other countries for energy. He also believes in the American people's resilience and ability to innovate, saying they will ultimately overcome these challenges.
So it's not all doom and gloom.
Not necessarily. Long sees the challenges, but he also thinks the U.S. can overcome them. But he emphasizes that it will take good economic policies and a willingness to make tough choices.
All right, we've talked about a lot here, We've explored the optimism of James Rickards and the cautions of Gordon T. Long. We've looked into those potential power struggles between Trump and Congress, and we've broken down the economic problems facing the country. Before we move on, let's take a moment to think about what all this means for our listeners. Welcome back to The Deep Dive. We've spent this episode unpacking some pretty heavy topics: the potential ramifications of a second Trump administration based on Gordon T. Long's The Unshackling of America and James Rickards' A Reset for America. We've explored those different viewpoints, those potential political conflicts, and a lot of economic uncertainty. So now let's try to, kind of put all this information together and come up with some key takeaways for our listeners.
It's been a wild ride, hasn't it?
Yeah.
We started with Long's pretty bold statements about the potential for, like, revolutionary change.
Right.
We then got into the details of his analysis, looking at those proposed cabinet appointments, the controversial policy proposals, and the economic challenges on the horizon. And then we contrasted this with Rickards' more optimistic perspective, which, focuses on the potential for economic growth driven by deregulation, infrastructure spending, and a renewed sense of national purpose.
Yeah, it's almost like we're seeing two different futures.
Right.
One path, according to Long, is like full of risk with the potential for political turmoil, economic instability, and social unrest.
Yeah.
And the other path, as Rickards sees it, leads to this like revitalized America with a booming economy, a renewed sense of national pride, and a more assertive presence on the world stage.
And it's important to remember that both of these viewpoints come from how they understand the same set of facts.
Right.
Long and Rickards are both looking at the same economic data, the same political scene, and the same social trends. The difference is how much weight they give to those factors and what they think is most likely to happen.
So how do we, as, informed citizens, navigate this complicated and uncertain landscape? How do we make sense of these different narratives and make smart decisions about our own lives and how we participate in society?
That's the big question, isn't it?
It is.
I think the first step is realizing that there are no easy answers.
Yeah.
We're living in a time of big change and upheaval, and there's no way to know for sure what the future holds.
Right.
It's easy to get caught up in the hype and exaggeration that often dominates our political conversations, but it's important to take a step back, take a deep breath, and try to see the bigger picture.
Yeah. Long really emphasizes how important it is to understand history and learn from past mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
He argues that we're like in danger of repeating those same errors that caused previous economic crises. And he's telling us to be careful about excessive debt, leverage, and speculation.
He also stresses the importance of personal responsibility and self-reliance. He thinks we can't just depend on the government to solve our problems.
Right.
We need to take control of our own lives, invest in our education and skills, and create strong communities.
On the other hand, Rickards has more faith in the government's ability to create a positive future.
Yeah.
He thinks that strong leadership, bold policies, and that can-do spirit can overcome the challenges we're facing. He's especially excited about Trump's idea for a Department of Government Efficiency, which he thinks could simplify bureaucracy, reduce waste, and free up resources for more productive investments.
He's also optimistic about the potential for technological innovation to drive economic growth and make our lives better.
Yeah.
He sees opportunities in things like artificial intelligence, biotechnology, and renewable energy.
So we have these two contrasting perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
Long, the cautious historian, warning us about potential problems and urging us to be ready for the worst.
Yeah.
And then we have Rickards, the optimistic futurist, who envisions a better future fueled by innovation, entrepreneurship, and that renewed sense of national purpose.
It really comes down to each of us deciding which story feels more true to us.
Yep.
But the main takeaway, I think, is that we need to stay engaged, informed, and actively involved in creating the future we want.
Absolutely.
We need to be critical thinkers who can look at information from different sources and come to our own conclusions.
We need to understand the risks and challenges ahead, but also be open to the possibilities and opportunities that might come up.
Exactly.
We need to be willing to question what we think we know, challenge assumptions, and come up with new ideas.
Most importantly, we need to remember that we're all in this together.
Yeah.
The choices we make now will affect future generations. So let's work towards a future that's prosperous, fair, and sustainable for everyone.
Well said. That's a powerful message to leave our listeners with.
Thanks.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We hope you found it informative and thought-provoking. Keep questioning, keep learning, and keep diving deep.